Hello, and welcome to episode 16, the Walk, Don't Run edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, including interviews with artists and creators across the county. We have a lot of content to get to this week, so the podcast is a little extended, but we hope you'll enjoy it nonetheless, so let's get right to it. We'll start off with the Live at the Met production of Turandot, coming on Saturday, May 7th at 2 p.m. Joining me for a discussion on this Puccini masterpiece is the interim director of the School of Music at SUNY Fredonia, and a magnificent baritone in his own right, Mr. Dan Ihas. Dan Ihas, welcome to the podcast. It's about time I got you on here.
Thanks so much for asking me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, great. Excellent. Wonderful. Wonderful. So we're here to talk about an opera that was written by Giacomo Puccini. And, you know, the interesting thing about Puccini's operas is I always forget that they're rather modern. Like he was a composer in the early part of the 20th century and not one of these like 17th or 18th century composers. We have a lot more information on him and current stuff. But one of the things that's very interesting is that before I even get started, we need to really know there's a little bit of a controversy about how to pronounce the name of this opera. So I'm going to leave it to you to discuss that for a second here.
Oh, my goodness sakes. Can I just say to you, people think it's, you know, the French pronunciation, because there's a history of where the story comes from. Someone who researched these books that the storyline comes from in French. And they thought, well, maybe it's Turandot or something like that.
Right.
And then it comes from Turin, and it was originally Turandot.
Oh, okay.
It's not an Italian name, and it is not a French name or whatever other pronunciation. So if you were going to pronounce it correctly in its original form, it would be Turandot in that way. Somehow along the line, Puccini and Toscanini and the others originally, they said Turandot. Mm-hmm. Puccini's granddaughter actually was the one who adopted this name, now in the Venetian vernacular, say Turandot. So okay. It could be pronounced either way, and either way is acceptable. But I'm on your podcast right now, and I'm telling you it must be pronounced Turandot.
Okay. And that's the way I'll pronounce it too. Okay. Turandot.
Right.
Okay.
There's another character in the opera, the sort of secondary female role. And her name is Liu, L-I-U with an accent grave over it.
Right.
And it's not to be pronounced as a glide, like in Italian, sometimes they'd say Liu. But it's two syllables. And actually in Chinese, I looked this up because I don't know anything about Chinese, mm-hmm. but they say Leo. Oh. It has pitch difference in it. And it's actually A-O with an open O, Leo. So however you say her name, it should be two syllables, Liu.
Okay. And that's it's actually quite fascinating in all of that, because I believe that the original story is a Persian story.
Yes.
And so you have these influences from the Persian story. You have these influences from, Italian and French pronunciations of the name. You have some Chinese elements, which we'll get to in a minute. And it's quite an interesting mix of culture and pronunciation and all of that. With the pronunciation of Turandot, does that affect the singing at all?
Yeah, I think it can, not necessarily in a negative way, but articulation. And I think it can be very clear. I don't think there's any great reason not to sing to pronounce the T for singing, unless it's at the extreme of the range.
Right.
You know.
Right. Okay. Musically, you know, Verdi's pretty much at the top of his game, and there's a number of very famous arias in there. Let's talk about a little bit about the arias and what the audience can expect in this kind of opera. So what have you got for me?
Sure. So this is wonderful, actually. Probably one of the shortest Puccini arias written, and probably one of the most famous arias. You know, this was written near the end of his life. Actually, he didn't quite finish it, but at the end of his life, he had already written Bohème and Tosca and all those other operas. But this aria, there's something in its construction that's very, it's really enticing to the ear. It makes you want to listen. And I'm sure that opera lovers and those that are not yet opera lovers will recognize the song because it's so incredibly popular. The name of the aria is Nessun Dorma, and the title means No One Sleeps. It's sung by the tenor, and it was made famous when the opera first came out, you know, 1926, I forget who actually originated the role, but it was famous even then. But what made it skyrocket into, you know, everyone's awareness was that I think 1990, it was at the FIFA World Cup, whenever that was, I think it was 1990.
1990, yeah.
Luciano Pavarotti sang it at that soccer event, and the world went crazy. There were a lot of people listening to it, opera lovers and alike. And because the way the music is written, it's not, there's a real high note, a high B, I think it is, near the end of the opera on the word vincerò, which means I will win. It's in the future tense. And he sustains that high note. It's not really written that way, but he just sort of holds it out. And then the last note, of course, is an A, and you hold on to that forever as written. But in sort of the Italian, very overly passionate way, he sustained that high note, and the crowd went wild. And then, of course, after that, you know, the three tenors, it was like a competition that was always programmed on their thing. And then you see it pop up in America's Got Talent and Britain's Got Talent. And, you know, it's just one of those pieces. It's very uplifting, and it's got a great high note at the end for the tenor to sing. It's pretty amazing. But I'll say before that ever happened, back in 1982, I was a student at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And there was a movie that had come out with this Italian singer named Yes Giorgio. And the Italian singer just happened to be Luciano Pavarotti.
Oh.
It was a terrible movie. Terrible. Just awful. Terrible plot, terrible movie. But that was when I heard Luciano Pavarotti sing this. You know, they had it in a stage version. It was just a clip. And the aria is short. It's only like 3.5 minutes long. So, you know, fit well into the theme of the movie. And supposedly he's this opera singer who gets nervous and loses his voice and whatever. They find some remedy for him, and he gets out there, and he's victorious at the end now because he could sing through the aria and not lose his voice. Mm-hmm. But that was the first time I heard it. I didn't speak any Italian at all. I had no idea what was going on. The movie was terrible, but that tune stuck in my head. And then, you know, later on in college, when I came across this opera and I listened to it and I heard that aria, I'm like, what? That's what this is from? Amazing. Just an amazing connection for me. Great piece. Everyone will recognize it.
And everyone will love it too. It's so melodic.
It is. It is. And interestingly enough, the secondary character, Liu, sings two arias. Signora Scolta is the first one, and she's talking to Calaf, and I think in that aria she says something, she's basically pleading with him not to try to guess these riddles that are, we'll talk about that later, but she doesn't want him to end up killing himself or being killed because no one can guess the riddles, right? So she's pleading to, please listen to me, don't do this, right? And the second one happens, I think, like in the third act. She's being tortured by Turandot to give up the name of Calaf. And she refuses to do so for love. And she basically says to Turandot, look, I'm doing this for love. Love is going to get you too. You know, you're going to be wrapped up in this kind of love and you're going to lose yourself in it. And she actually takes her own life. Very dramatic, Puccini-esque, just like Madame Butterfly kind of moment. You know, it's just great aria. And then the other really big one, but you don't really hear, non-opera people talk about these three arias very much is, In Questa Reggia. Mm-hmm. And in it's Turandot's aria. And it's interesting because the music for both Calaf and Liu are very melodic. They're easy on the ear. They're very passionate and dramatic. This In Questa Reggia is about Turandot's life and how she's tormented in a sense by what has happened to her in the past. And the music is kind of angular for Puccini. It's not really melodic. It's dramatic, but it's not, it doesn't sit on the ear real well. You don't go out of the theater to, you know, singing that tune so much. It's dramatic and it's beautiful, but it's got weird harmonies in it that you don't hear in the other pieces. And I think he used the music to sort of support that idea of her character, you know?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
Liu music is more like Mimi, you know, it's got that kind of melody, that kind of drama in it.
Yes.
But melodic, you could recognize the tune, you know, like Un Bel Di or one of those other arias.
But he does some interesting things with the music in terms of the setting, because he took this Persian story, actually set it in China, and then he did some very interesting things with some Chinese influence. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I think, and I don't know all of the themes, but I have read and I remember that there are about 8 different Chinese traditional melodies or types of melodies that he's incorporated into the music, I think specifically in Turandot's music, you know, different modes, different scales, that kind of thing. He does this often, even in, say, Butterfly. There are elements in that sound very much like it could be Asian or it could be Japanese in that way, you know. I think it's also interesting that this is, it's fiction, right? It is not realism, or what he would typically write in is a Verismo style, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is like realism. This is more like fantasy, you know, everything about it is fantasy. So he's still getting across that sort of universal message in the plot of the opera, but the music and the story is not really like a Bohème, you know, where it would be more like realistic.
The opera itself has a very interesting history attached to it in terms of, you know, its initial performances. Now, as you mentioned before, Puccini didn't actually finish this. He died before the opera was finished, and eventually it was finished by one of his colleagues. But it opened at La Scala, I believe, and something very interesting happened on opening night. What was that, Dan?
Oh my gosh, I can't thank you enough for asking that question. You know, I came across this in my reading of this recently, and I did not know this. And it to me is very intimate and very very important that we all put this into context. It was premiered on April 25th, 1926 at La Scala in Milan, and Toscanini, the great Toscanini, was conducting that performance on the premiere performance being conducted by Arturo Toscanini in the middle of Act 3, 2 measures after the words Liu Poesia, the orchestra stopped. Toscanini stopped and laid down his baton, turned to the audience and announced, "Here the opera ends because at this point the maestro died." Mm. And there was like a moment of silence, the curtain came down, and then it came back up and they finished the opera as it was done by somebody else. Ah. I found that incredibly moving.
Wow. That's just a wonderful tribute to Puccini, and sort of a great recognition of you know, his place in the world of opera. And it's nice that they recognize that. And I mean, Arturo Toscanini himself was a great star of La Scala, so on.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tribute from one maestro to another, for sure. So before we bring an end to this discussion, I know that it's, you know, opera plots are always like you know, they're all over the place, right? But this one's this one has a main plot and a nice little subplot. But the main plot is, of course, the Prince Caliph is trying to gain the love of the Princess Turandot, and she is famously cold. And the story goes that there are three riddles that someone who wants to marry her must answer. And if you can't answer the three riddles, you're beheaded. The interesting thing is, I think it would be a nice to end the interview by asking the audience. Let's ask the listeners what the three riddles are. So I know you know the three riddles. So go ahead, give the audience the three riddles.
Well, I'm going to read them. I'm going to read them so I don't screw it up. Okay,
that's fine.
But do you know what the three riddles are? And here they are. Number one: what is born each night and dies each day? I will not tell you the answer. Number two: what flickers red and warm like a flame, yet is not a flame? Tricky. Number three: what is like ice but burns, and if it accepts you as a slave, makes you a king? So you better get them right, Tom, or your head will be on the floor before you can get into the opera house.
Well, I think I'm supposed to be ushering that night, so I don't want to get caught without the answers. That's for sure. But it's all great drama. It's all great drama. You get especially in opera, and that's what I love about it most. You know, when what I love about Puccini is it's so melodic, it's so dramatic, and it's just an awful lot of fun. Now, I don't know. I'm gonna close with this. I don't know if you know this or not. So I'm not to put you on the spot, but I think it's one of the things that the listeners who are going to see this live at the Met performance on May 7th at 1 o'clock. There's actually kind of an interesting twist. A Ukrainian soprano has been substituted for, I think, the original Russian singer. Am I right about that?
Right. Yes. And her name is Lyudmila Monasterska,
yeah.
I think.
Yes.
Yeah, which is very unusual because, I mean, it would have typically, you know, maybe done by Anna Netrebko or something like that, who's a staunch Russian, but she's been replaced by this Ukrainian. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's an interesting political angle here that I think audiences who might want to see this opera should take into account when they go, because the situation at the moment put the Met in an awkward situation. I think they've solved it pretty well.
Yes. Well, the Met chorus had come out and with the orchestra perhaps had sung the Ukrainian national anthem as mm-hmm. well. That's been out on the airwaves and social media and stuff.
Dan, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I think your listeners got a good introduction to Turandot, and it should make it more valuable for them to listen to.
Excellent. Thank you for your wonderful pronunciation of Turandot.
You're welcome. And Dan, let me also say that I wish you great luck. I understand you're retiring in July from the School of Music at Fredonia. You've had an illustrious career over there as a voice teacher, singer, mentor to so many young people. Congratulations to you on your retirement. I hope you enjoy it. We have to have a gin and tonic on your porch someday.
Okay, absolutely. Thanks so much, Tom. Appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Bye. Bye-bye. Puccini's Turandot will be screened on Saturday, May 7th at 2 p.m. For information on tickets, just check the show notes or go to the Opera House website at www.fredopera.org. We'll call the box office at 716-679-1891. Sunday, April 24th was the date for the major fundraiser, the 1891 Run for the Opera House. It was a gorgeous day, so I decided to walk the route and use my mobile phone to grab interviews and record my thoughts on the walk. The mobile audio equipment used, my cell phone and an earbud microphone combination, was not the highest quality equipment to use, but it was what I had. So bear with me, please, as the audio quality is not exactly the greatest.
How you doing this morning, Rick?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, good.
Good, good.
We're recording for the podcast, you know.
Yeah, oh, yes, wonderful.
Yeah.
We're very excited.
We're
people are starting to show up. We're about 15 minutes to the start of the race.
It looks like you got a beautiful day.
Oh, my gosh, we couldn't have any better day.
Yeah.
Now, it'll snow Wednesday.
Yes,
but I don't care.
No. Well,
today's
Wednesday
beautiful.
Take care of itself, right?
Yes, today's beautiful.
Yeah, we got a gorgeous day.
Yep.
Good morning, ladies. Are you ready to run?
So ready to walk.
Oh, yes? You walk on the route?
When do we start?
9 o'clock.
Yeah.
9 o'clock.
Okay.
It's 9 o'clock?
Crystal.
Yeah.
It starts over there. There's flags that indicate the starting.
Okay.
It goes around the building. And down to Central, up Central, onto campus, around Ring Road, out to Brigham.
So I'm picking you up here for an interview, Jim.
Okay.
Now, you ready to walk today? Is that what you're doing? You're walking?
I am walking.
Yeah? Oh, good, good, good. So am I.
Yep.
Well, so am I. What is it that makes you want to walk for the Opera House?
Well, you know, it's a wonderful resource, and it needs support. It needs more than it gets, but people do their best. You know, we want people to come here from not simply Dunkirk and Westfield, but from further distances. Well, why are they going to come? They're going to come to involve themselves with the town, and that means with the Opera House. And so that's it.
Okay, well, good. Well, congratulations to you. Good luck. I'm going to need it. I don't know if I'm going to need it. It's going to be a long walk.
Yeah.
Hi there, ladies.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing a little bit of interviews for people who are getting ready to are you walking or running?
We're running.
Oh, you are running. Okay, so you're going to beat me. And what makes you want to run for the 5K for the Opera House?
Well, we're doing the Buffalo Half, so we're just getting ready for that.
Just getting ready for that. And then I assume once you do that, you're going to go run someplace else, right? I mean, 5K is nothing for you ladies, right?
We're not sure yet. We haven't gotten past the Buffalo Half yet.
Well, we certainly got a nice day for it, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So we appreciate you coming out. Good luck with the run.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I came all the way from Ohio just for this.
Just for this?
Yes.
Wow, why?
Well, I grew up here.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So these are my friends. This is my friend and this is my sister.
Hi,
uh-huh.
Good morning.
I'm support.
Who's your support? Julie Nelson and Lori Nelson.
Yes, we grew up here.
Uh-huh.
I live in Ohio now and I came back, drove 5 hours yesterday.
Well, you're lucky because we have a good day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd be here if it was sleeting.
No, but that sometimes happens.
Yes.
We'd be doing it in spirit.
Yeah.
That's why we're here. We're supporting our hometown.
Great. You feel in shape for the walk? Ready to go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not going to beat anybody. But
No, neither am I. But
yeah.
You
our
know.
Goal is
so can I catch you for a couple of words for the Opera House podcast?
Sure.
Yeah, so who do I got here?
Richard Betts.
Richard, are you an experienced walker, runner?
Both.
Oh, both? Are you running or walking?
Walking. I'm running today.
Oh, you're running today?
Yes.
Oh, that's good. I assume you've done 5Ks before.
Yes.
Oh, good. Do you intend on placing?
Well, at my age group, 70 plus, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As I tell my family, says, I placed today. How many were in your group, Dad? Two of us.
That makes no difference.
Yeah, I placed. No, you placed. That's the way to do it. It's good. We have a pretty good day today to do
yes,
it too.
It's a wonderful day to be out here.
Yeah, I'd support the Opera House. I assume you like supporting the place.
I like supporting different organizations.
Ah.
This is my first race back after pulmonary embolism in January.
Oh, wow.
And I knew this was going to be a good day.
Yeah.
It's somewhat of a flat course.
Yes.
And so I thought, all right, let me go out and see where I'm at today.
Right.
And so I'm here.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. And Ria.
This is the Hungarian national soccer chant. It's like, let's go Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You must be Hungarian.
I am. Isn't everyone?
Okay. And let's see, those socks are something else too.
Yeah, these are actually my knee supports. It's a combination of ankle support, calf support, and knee support. Without these, I couldn't run.
All rolled into one, huh?
Yep.
Wow. How do you pronounce that last name, John?
Lezak.
Lezak, John Lezak. So you've got and the red gray sneakers with red laces.
Yeah.
You're going to be hard to miss.
I stand out. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my wife can see me at the end of the race and take my picture.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming out to support the run.
Absolutely. I used to come here years ago with my dad because he was a big Glenn Miller fan, and I know that Apple House had Glenn Miller several times, so we used to come out for that. I love the institution.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place, and it's I know this is a big fundraiser, so we thank everybody who comes out to do the run. Much appreciated.
Okay.
I'll be able to catch up with you if I need to, because I won't be able to miss that outfit. Thanks a lot. Everybody's getting ready to go. And I'm taking my place in the back of the line. There we go. And we're off. Wish me luck. Here we go. The runners are already, you know, a little way ahead of the walkers, obviously. But it's a nice crowd this morning. Good mixture of ages. You know, it's kind of an interesting day because it's really pretty beautiful. The weather's really, really nice. You couldn't really ask for much more. Okay, well, it looks like I'm coming up on, Central Avenue, and I believe that's Newton Street. Yeah, and so far, so good. I'm not completely out of breath yet, but it really is a nice day. I mean, it's hard to, you know, the weather's been so bad lately, and coming out on a day like this and taking a walk really, really kind of makes you feel good, gets the endorphins going, a lot of good things. So, Central and Newton, I just got onto the college campus. It's 9:20 in the morning, and the walk is going well so far. I stopped for a little bit of water for doing your cycling, had a little water truck there. And I'm carrying water, which is fine, but, you know, it's nice to be able to just stop at a place, pick up a cup of water, and move along. I see the Phillips Ulrich Community Trail is looking good. There's not a lot of bloom yet this time of year, but still, the day is fine, and I really can't complain. I think that the entrance to the college, when I actually kind of walked in, that was a mile. So, and I've also got my tracker on, my walking program that records, you know, the other daily walks that I take. So. It's telling me that I've done a mile, but it's also a little bit behind time because I started it late. You know, I think what's really amazing as I walk along approaching University Village on the campus at SUNY Fredonia is how many people walk with like nothing, you know, no water. No snacks, nothing to fuel themselves. And I've got a backpack on, and in it, you know, I've got like two containers of water, probably about four or five bars, some granola. And maybe it's just because a lot of times I'm used to walking much longer distances. Oh, there you go. Kind of tells you where I'm at. Wow, the day's getting better and better. Warm, it's getting warmer. If I could peel off my shirt, I guess I would. I'm probably a little overdressed at this point, but you can feel it. You can feel spring. And I think that's going to be a bit of a letdown come the middle of the week when the sleet and the rain start to show up again. Oof. Yeah, coming up on
the entrance out, heading towards Brigham Road, crossing the road, and okay, I've hit the Brigham Road entrance for the college, come around the corner, and heading towards Temple Road. Starting to feel the burn a little bit around the knees, a little bit up the back of the thighs, hamstrings. It's a good workout though. I know I'll probably be popping 3 or 4 vitamin I's when I get back. Hopefully I'll lose a couple of pounds too. I went to the doctor's the other day and, as always, looked at the weight and went, oh my God. but maybe this will shed a little bit of water weight and I can keep on working towards the impossible goal. Just hit the mile 2 marker, according to the sign. Mile 2. It's a 5K, 3-mile walk. And I'm passing the Campus and Community Children's Center, heading towards the corner of Brigham and Temple. Got the home stretch coming up, 1 more mile. Oh. I had to get a drink of water. And these two kids, obviously from the college, were just on the side. It looks like they're getting ready maybe to for that autism walk. And they had a couple of water bottles in their basket, but I just asked them to get mine out from the side of my pouch, which that means I don't have to take it out myself. What a plus. Nice cool water. I just had that little girl and her mom and dad pass me. She was running along the way and just came along and zipped right by me by my right. It's cute as a button. Cute as a button. Oh, so we're coming up to the Temple Road entrance for the walk, Old Main Road, across from the vineyards. Last leg, I think. Getting a little winded now for sure. But I got a lot of faith now that I'll make it. I think that's the best part. Been a long time since I've walked 3 miles. And it's kind of nice to think it's actually still possible, although, like I said, I'll be paying for it later. Well, coming up on the corner of Temple and Risley, and I'm beginning to kind of notice that there are more green buds along these trees on Temple. It seems to be more noticeable right at the moment. There's some forsythia blooming here and there, obviously. One thing I miss, you know, is a lilac bush. I haven't seen one in a long time. I used to have one in my backyard. It's gone. But lilacs are beautiful. And I was observing that for all the times that I have driven up and down Temple Avenue, Temple Street, I've hardly ever walked it. This is, of course, the famous walk from the college to downtown. And college students do it all the time. But for me, I was always driving down this road. I spent so much time driving down this road. Now I'm walking it. You know, you see things that you just don't have in your head as being part of the scenery. The way the houses are structured, the different types that are along Temple Street. I'm passing the WCA home now. Big, beautiful, gorgeous building. They keep it in nice shape. Some houses are very plain. A couple of brick houses here and there. Just kind of an amazing thing to be able to sort of walk. There's a Nice little brick house I'm passing now with a bench. Nicely landscaped daffodils. Things are starting to bloom. So, not all bad yet. I'm passing the house now that I believe at one time belonged to Addie Marsh Gaddard and Will Gaddard, two great supporters of the arts in Fredonia, Dunkirk. Addie was the woman who got me my house. She was selling real estate and got me my house, the one I live in Dunkirk to this day. Will was a wonderful storyteller and well-recognized and well-loved professor at the college. Addie used to come to the shows I directed. They were a wonderful couple. It's nice to walk past their house and remember them. Just cross Central and Temple, in front of the One Temple Square building. And this is definitely almost the way home. I can see the Opera House from here, so, you know, I know that I'm closing in.
Yeah? Are you getting the wagon again? You ready to go to sleep? You look tired. Well, I'm walking.
Looks like little June is worn out.
Sprint.
Hi, Rick.
I'm ahead. Strong. Got to cross that line.
Okay.
What line do I have to cross?
That right there, the red line.
Oh, the red line?
Yeah.
I'm wasting my time. I'm ruining my time.
Oh, you are. That's right. So are you the end?
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, you're the end.
I don't know if I'm the end, but I'm probably pretty close, right?
Pretty close. That's a good time, Tom.
Coming to the finish line. Yay. Made it.
Way to go.
All right. Cross the finish line. Everything good. Crowd looks great. Sarah Mahalik, how'd you like the run?
I love the walk. It's just fabulous community at the Opera House. Fabulous event in support of the Opera House and to celebrate this beautiful day in Fredonia.
Yeah, isn't it really nice? It's a nice day.
It could not be better. It makes up for the years we've missed.
Yes, for sure. I was walking down Temple Street and I was watching the buds are just starting to come out. It's
mm-hmm.
really looking gorgeous.
Yep, it's bursting. Bursting with color and life. We're just so grateful.
It's bursting with color. Now, I'm going to get you to commit at this point. For those of you that don't know, Sarah Mahalik's a local artist. And she's got to do an interview for me because I think over the summer one of the things I'm going to do is interview individual artists in the area. So I'm going to have you on. I don't know when, but I'm going to have you on. You going to commit to that?
I will commit to it,
okay.
Sir. Thanks for asking and look forward to it.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, we'll be talking to you then.
Okay, have a wonderful day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. I want to walk.
Well, I'm sitting in a little bit of shade and it's been quite the walk. The last person just went across about 5 minutes ago, so they're starting to wrap it up. I am going to kind of bring this to a conclusion, actually. I'll be able to get you information about the winners and the categories and all that kind of stuff. We'll put that up when I put the podcast together. So it's been a lot of fun doing the walk. It was a good thing. I think I came in seventh to last. So, but I got it done within an hour, which is like, you know, that's my personal goal, to get 3 miles in an hour, and I feel like I'm doing pretty good. So, you'll be hearing all of this hopefully up in the next podcast, and on which is coming up this coming Wednesday the 27th, and we'll drop it then. See you all later.
Here's the arts calendar in the region for the next 2 weeks. The Fredonia Wind Ensemble, under the direction of Dr. Paula Holcomb, will present an original composition by Augusta Reed Thomas, featuring bassoonist Nadina Mackie Jackson, on Saturday, April 30th at 8 p.m. in King Concert Hall. The Fredonia Chamber Orchestra, led by Dr. David Rudge, will play its final concert of the year on Tuesday, May 3rd at 8 p.m. in Rausch Recital Hall. The concert includes works by Purcell, Shostakovich, and Debussy. In addition, the Fredonia College Symphony will present its final concert under the baton of retiring music director Dr. David Rudge on Saturday, May 7th at 8 p.m. in King Concert Hall. Our congratulations to Dr. Rudge on an outstanding career at SUNY Fredonia. The Fredonia New Jazz Orchestra, directed by Dr. Nick Weiser, will perform on Wednesday, May 4th in Rausch Recital Hall, beginning at 8 p.m. The Fredonia Chamber Choir and College Choir will perform a tribute concert to Emeritus Professor Dr. David Evans on Thursday, May 5th in Rausch Recital Hall at 8 p.m. The concert will feature many former vocal students of Dr. Evans, with a special tribute by voice teacher Laurie Tremuda. The Department of Theater and Dance will present its final show of the Walter Gluhr Mainstage Series. The Fredonia Dance Ensemble will feature works by faculty choreographers as well as pieces by three guest artists. The dates are Friday, May 6th at 7:30 p.m. and two shows on Saturday, May 7th, with the matinee beginning at 2 p.m. and the evening show beginning at 7:30 p.m. The concert will be held in the Marvel Theater at the Rockefeller Arts Center. The Marion Art Gallery presents the Senior Show, featuring the work of senior graduates from the Department of Visual Arts and New Media. The show will be up from Wednesday, April 27th through Saturday, May 4th, with an opening reception on Friday, April 29th at 6 p.m. The Hunchback of Notre Dame will open for its run beginning Wednesday, April 27th, and run on various dates until May 7th at the Main Street Studio Theater. See their website at mainstreetstudios.org for dates and times, and check out their interview from the April 13th edition of this podcast. Finally, here at the Opera House, Remembering John Denver with Ted Vigil will take place on Friday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are still available. On Saturday, April 30th at 1 p.m., the Stage on Screen series continues with a screening of London's Bridge Theatre production of The Book of Dust, a live adaptation of Philip Pullman's fantasy novels. Featuring fantastic stage settings and visual effects, the production uniquely captures Pullman's parallel universe in this spellbinding production. The cinema series also continues with a screening of the movie The Outfit, an old-fashioned mystery crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Mark Rylance. The Outfit screens on Saturday, April 30th at 7:30 p.m. and again on Tuesday, May 3rd at 7:30 p.m. And lastly, the Live at the Met series presentation of Puccini's Turandot will be shown on Saturday, May 7th at 1 p.m. Tickets for events at the Opera House can be purchased online at www.fredopera.org/tickets or by calling the box office at 716-679-1891. Tickets for all campus events can be purchased online at www.fredonia.edu/tickets or by calling the campus box office at 716-673-3501. If you'd like your arts events mentioned on the podcast, just send us an email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Please allow 4 weeks advance notice for a timely mention. That's the voice of SUNY Fredonia graduate Nia Drummond, who will be returning to campus to give the inaugural Helen Tinch Williams recital in the Rausch Recital Hall on Friday, April 29th at 8 p.m. Since her graduation from Fredonia, Nia has gone on to perform as a singer in a myriad array of styles with an incredible collection of major artists. I had a chance to catch up with her as she was getting prepared to return to campus. Well, I can't tell the listeners how excited I am to have Nia Drummond here on the podcast. Welcome, Nia.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting, and I'm so thrilled to be here as well.
You know, it makes the teacher in me happy to see a student, a former SUNY Fredonia student, do as well as you've been doing, and that's what's kind of overwhelming. You've had such great success as you've been out there, and
It's just lovely to see. It's lovely to see.
Well, listen, I couldn't do it without you all. It's been, you know, Fredonia has always been, has such a special place in my heart, and the teachers and faculty. It's a magical land.
Yeah. Fredonia. it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So you are coming back to Fredonia to perform the inaugural Helen Tinch Williams recital. That's quite something.
That is something. It's amazing because, I mean, my freshman year at Fredonia, she came in and she was honored. She got an award from the Hillman Opera Company. And she was there, you know, Vanessa was there. I don't believe Chris, I don't remember seeing Chris, but yeah. I remember seeing them and we met and we took a picture and it was really nice. And I will never forget that. And so the fact that I'm coming back, you know,
yeah,
older, you know, no longer a student, it's just like, oh my gosh, this is such a full circle moment, and I'm just really excited. It's going to be incredible.
Yes, and for those of listeners who don't know, Helen Tinch Williams is a graduate of SUNY Fredonia back in 1960. She's the mother of Vanessa Williams, and she and her daughter Vanessa wrote an award-winning book together called You Have No Idea About Their Lives Together. And it's a great read. So I just wanted to make sure we had that kind of background. Now, Nia, you have become someone whose vocal variety and range is really astounding. I mean, I'm just kind of catching up with you now, but you call yourself genre fluid, I believe. Is that the term you're using?
There you go. It's because, you know what? You know, God rest his soul, you know, Dr. Gerald T. Gray, he's taught at Fredonia, and he was director of choral activities and, you know, voice, incredible voice teacher, incredible voice. He said to me, I'll never forget, he said, you know, Nia, Frank Sinatra is not less or more musical than Luciano Pavarotti. And I was like, you're absolutely right. And choosing a genre is like choosing my favorite child. I just can't do it, you know? And I love a good aria, like I love a good jazz standard, like I love a good hymn. It's just keep it going, keep it flowing, you know. I love music, I love art.
Well, it looks like you've really you've put together a superb program of genre fluidity, I must say. I want to go over your program just a little bit so people Absolutely. Know what they're in for. You're doing a couple of art songs to start with. Mm-hmm. Florence Price is on. Poulenc is on, Joseph Marx is on, and what is it about those particular songs you really like?
Well, so I wanted to start the recital with a Black woman composer that many people haven't really heard her work. You know, she's a magnificent composer, along with Udine Smith Moore and just so many Black composers, Black women, I think is just very superb. So I wanted to highlight that. Poulenc, I didn't sing a lot of French repertoire, you know, at Fredonia, and it's my fault because I was very afraid of the French language. Uh-huh. So I wanted to do, you know, Poulenc, and he's one of my favorite composers. And Joseph Marx, I love Marx. And that particular art song is just superb and absolutely stunning. So I'm excited to sing those and bring that to you all.
Yeah, Selig Nacht. I remember hearing that a few times in juries from students, and but never yours.
I didn't go for theater. I went for classical voice.
Yes, I know. I kept trying to. It was really funny because I kept trying. I said, can someone get me to talk to Nia? I got to talk to Nia. I got to get her in the department. But yes. You know, you stayed with classical voice. Fair enough. And speaking of a classical piece which I directed at Fredonia, which I really love, is La Boheme. I mean, I really love Puccini as a whole, but that particular, I've done both sides of it now. I did Rent and I also did La Boheme, yeah. So I can claim to have directed both stories. And you're doing the Donnellietta, the Act 3 aria from. What about, what do you like about that one?
I love the fact that that is Mimi's last attempt. It's just like something about that last breath. you know, almost like, you know, another Puccini opera, Turandot, where Liu is, you know, Signore Ascolta, this is her last attempt to, you know, say my piece and say what I need to say. I think that's very important. And just Puccini is just absolutely gorgeous, 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 gorgeous writing. And to be able to play those pieces, I mean, that piece and the rest of the pieces with Matt Marco, whom I collaborated with, you know, while I was at Fredonia, is going to be so much fun. I'm so excited to be able to play that with him. So it's going to be
It's a very, you know, it's a very haunting piece too. I mean, I don't think people realize
it. You know, it's so much going on, and but she at that same time, as weak as she is, she still has something to say.
Yes. Yes, and I think it's very powerful. And there's and you get, at the same time, you get this haunting melody that Puccini has developed. You also get these little tiny little grace notes in there that are, you know, they're just kind of, they sprinkle through the opera, and it's kind of wonderful the way he incorporates the past sensibility of their relationship into this, you know, very poignant moment. There's some pretty kick-ass notes there, Nia.
Yes, there are.
I hope you're up for that.
Absolutely.
Great. Great. And then your third section in your program is going to be a collection of, looks like I've got five different spirituals here. Talk to me about those. What, you know, I see you've got all kinds of different arrangements and, you know, five different very popular ones. Tell me what gets you about these?
So the first piece, I believe, is On My Journey Now. It was arranged by Edward Boltner, which is so hard to find. You have no idea how hard that music is to find.
Really?
Weeks. Amazing. But it's a piece that I know that I grew up hearing, all those pieces, you know, in a way I grew up hearing that music my whole entire life.
Right.
You know, and it's very testimonial, a lot of that. So On My Journey Now is extremely, I think, the most testimonial one. It's a lot more fun and enjoyable part of the spiritual. And about life. So that's the first one. What's the second one?
You got Give Me Jesus here?
Give Me Jesus. That arrangement I actually heard by this amazing singer named Callie Day. And the arrangement is just, oh my goodness. But like I said, it's another testimonial. It is about, you know, I may not have all the things I want in my life, or I might not have a pot to piss in. And what's the rest of the saying? Something fell out of it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's just a piece that no matter what, give me Jesus. And that's a big part of, you know, African-American experience.
Yeah, Watch and Pray.
Watch and Pray, that one is not particularly spiritual. That one is more, it's very emotionally intense. It's about the you know, but well, okay, so I'll tell you the text. It's Mama's Master Gonna Sell Us Tomorrow, yes, yes, yes. So it's basically an exchange between a mother and a child about, you know, is this what, you know, are we gonna be separated? Is this what our life is? And it is very powerful. And it talks about that experience and the strength of, you know, watching and praying through it all, you know, including, you know, being sold and being separated from your family. So
yeah,
that's what that piece is about.
Yeah. And then we've got Balm and Gilead, and He Got the Whole World in His Hands. I think those are two that certainly I'm familiar with.
Those are the two familiar ones. I chose Balm and Gilead because I will never forget Dr. Gray. That was one of his favorite songs. And being from Tennessee, you know, he's from the church. And I'll never forget in conducting class, we had conducting class with him. We did an arrangement, William Dawson's Balm and Gilead. And he sang the solo one time. Well, he sang it a few times, but there was, I don't know what that one time was. Every time, you know, that one time he really, it just left the imprint on my heart, and I'll never forget it. And that was how many years ago? Good Lord.
Oh,
so I chose that, you know, for him.
Oh, for him. Yeah. Yeah. I miss Gerald. We get a little intermission, and then we get your jazz set. Your fourth mm-hmm. set is your jazz set, and you know, all of these, man, what a selection. Blues in the Night, Lift Every Voice, What's Going On, Blackbird, Somewhere Over the Rainbow, Ain't Misbehaving. This is a to die for set.
You know, I chose, okay, so the reason why I chose, especially the jazz set, but it's in the classical set as well. Yeah, I wanted to make sure it was raw and real and be able to choose repertoire that people wouldn't necessarily hear all the time in Rausch Hall. You know, I found that to be very important. It kind of felt like it was my duty and my responsibility. Especially because being Black and coming back and singing all these genres, you know, I wanted to highlight, you know, Helen and her husband in a way, someone that, you know, someone of our skin tone, especially graduating in 1960. Holy moly, what was that like? You know,
right. Exactly.
Right. I wanted to make sure that experience was as raw and as, you know, it was some sort of pathway through their experience as well.
Right.
You know,
all of these tunes, you know, I looked at them and I went, these tunes speak to me as much as they speak to anybody, you know?
Right. And a lot of those tunes are tunes that we heard growing up, you know, whether you're, you know, you don't have to go to, you know, a conservatory or a music school or any of these schools for the arts to know these songs.
Right.
Everyone knows, you know, the Beatles and Blackbird.
Right.
You know? So right. Accessibility.
You don't even have to be as old as I am to know all these songs.
Oh, please, Tom.
Oh, man. Well, listen, let me change speed just a little bit and talk a little bit about your career. What's your, I mean, you know, your biography is 2 pages long. You've got incredible, you've Sir Elton John, Bette Midler, Billy Joel is on your list of people you work with. You've already done your debut at Lincoln Center in Pirates of Penzance. I mean, you've been around the block here, Nia, and you're working with some fantastic people. Bill T. Jones, Mikhail Baryshnikov, Valerie Simpson. Wow. What's this journey been like?
It's a little scary a little bit. Not in a bad way. It's just, I mean, I'm only 27 years old, and
yes.
I've been so blessed. And, you know, I haven't even lived life. I haven't even hit my 30s yet. But it's just, you know, I'm really blessed. And the amount of people that, you know, I know and organizations that I've been connected with, and to be able to go back and even the fact that I'm going back to Fredonia, it's something about my heart. I feel like I'm going to cry when I step foot, you know, on campus. It's just like, what, you know, but honestly, my career, like any singer, you have moments where you're all over the place. Like, I just came back from Mexico and it was an incredible experience. And I'm going to be doing a Latin American tour there soon, which is, you know, this not even just Mexico, just Latin America in itself.
Right.
And that is exciting. But one begets, you know?
Right.
So
right.
You've got to keep blossoming and make more connections. You know how it is.
What kind of goals you got for yourself? I mean, you're setting an incredibly strong foundation here. Where do you want to be?
I want to, well, here's some things I want to take into consideration for my career. Mm. I want to make sure that I'm living my purpose, and that's to obviously be an entertainer mm-hmm. in any form that it may be, you know, whichever way the wind blows. But also I want to make sure that I'm instilling and I'm being able to inspire other people, whether they're younger than me, older than me, you know, whether I can teach voice, that's also something that's very important. Actually, we're supposed to be on a tour right now with a friend of mine who's a pretty big artist, and she wanted me to go on tour with her to be her vocal coach, you know, just to check that she, you know, how her voice is doing, and, you know,
right.
And she's selling out stadiums.
Wow.
Which is crazy. In America, you're selling out stadiums, you want me to be your vocal coach? That's crazy. Uh-huh. But like, I want to be able to, that's also something I'm very passionate about. So I want to teach, I want to instill, but I also want to sing.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and some of the things that I've done, I never saw myself doing. I just did a television show. I never saw myself doing a television show.
Yeah.
Never saw myself playing Eveline in The Wiz. You know, that's not something I saw, you know, someone that studied classical voice is a soprano. I'm singing Eveline. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You know, so it's honestly, however the Lord or the universe, whatever you call the thing upstairs,
mm-hmm.
says, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. That's it.
Okay.
That's all I got. But you know, I'm very fortunate because a lot of my colleagues or just people in general that want to do what I do or what other people do don't necessarily get the opportunities. So I'm very fortunate and blessed.
Nia, you could be anything you want. You could be a Broadway star. You could be singing at the Met at some point in time because you're maturing. You're very talented. You were very talented when you were here, and it was very obvious to everybody. So, you know, this is all no surprise to us. Maybe a surprise to you, but ain't no surprise to us.
It's crazy. I mean, I never thought I would be the person going back and doing a recital to honor this incredible woman and her legacy, but also going back and doing a master class with these kids that I consider peers. You know what I'm saying? Like, what? you know.
Yes.
Like, that's wild. Or even stepping into Mason Hall, because, you know, I used to be a Mason Lounge rat. You know, I used to be there. And not knowing any of the faces, not knowing what's going on, you know, it's just, that's incredible to me.
Listen, Nia, I'm going to let you go because I know you probably got 1,001 things to do to get ready for the recital. And again, my congratulations to you. I'm very proud of the work you have done. I think we all are at Fredonia. We look forward to watching your career for another 10, 15 years. I think it's going to be outstanding.
Thank you so much, Tom. Such a great time and opportunity to speak with you today.
Yeah, me too. Great. Thank you, Nia. Thank you so much. We'll see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This is an event you won't want to miss, so be in the Roush Recital Hall on Friday, April 29th at 8 p.m. to hear this fabulous young singer perform. The best part? Admission is free. And that's it for this Walk, Don't Run edition of Notes from the Aisle Seat. My thanks to Mr. Dan Ehas and Ms. Nia Drummond for being my guests on this episode. Special thanks to the people who gave a little of their time for interviews during the 1891 run. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a production of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on any of the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891, visit the website at www.fredopera.org, or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. Notes from the Aisle Seat is now available wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and now Amazon Prime. If you like this podcast, please consider following us by clicking the follow button on our website and spreading the word through your social media feeds. If you have an arts event you'd like featured on the podcast, why don't you drop us a line at operahouse@fredopera.org and we'll see about featuring your event. Please try to give us a month's notice if possible to facilitate timely scheduling. We'll return in 2 weeks on May 11th, 2022. I'm Tom Laughlin, and until then, be safe out there and be kind to one another.